I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts. Hello, friends. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Creative Guts, the podcast that gets to the guts of creatives.
In today's episode, we're talking with Rob Brown, a drummer and woodworker who has combined those two passions to create custom solid wood drums.
Rob runs Level Plain Woodworkers in Derry, New Hampshire, and Brown Drums, a custom drum and repair shop.
Rob is a photographer, and he is the drummer of Quixote, which stands for Keep Your Opinions to Yourself. And you'll hear a sample of that in this episode. It's loud, but lovely.
We're going to jump right into this episode with Rob Brown.
So welcome, Rob Brown. Thanks for being on our podcast.
Sure. Thank you.
I've known you for a gazillion years, yes, give or take, and I've known you as a photographer and a musician, and more recently, to me, a woodworker. So you do a whole ton of stuff.
Yeah, I keep busy.
Keeping busy. At what age were you when you first thought, oh, I want to do creative stuff, and what was that creative stuff that you did?
Probably as a kid, it was mostly drawing and stuff like that. I kind of grew up in like a pack of cousins and brothers and lots of boys. You know, instead of playing football, I'd rather go draw on grandpa's desk. You know what I mean? I didn't really care about that kind of stuff. So it's, I don't know. It's, in a way, it was like kind of felt like the black sheep, but not in a negative way.
Yeah. But you're doing what you love.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, luckily my family's awesome and they're like, oh, cool. He likes that. You know, go for it.
Yeah.
So I was always kind of pushed in, like, you know, go for it, do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
You know? So
I love this combination of woodworking and drumming and then combining those two passions together to build drums. What came first?
It was definitely music first. I was pricing out, you know, new gear. I was like, okay, a new snare drum costs X amount of dollars. You know, I stumbled across, I think a DIY drum building forum, and I went deep in and saw all the stuff that people are doing, and some of it is like really impressive woodworking on just even a higher level. So everything kind of built off that. So I started pricing out. You know, at the time I was living in an apartment, I had no access to do any of this stuff. But my stepdad has always been kind of into woodworking and kind of a tinker builder, you know, looking to do all sorts of different stuff. And so he had all this stuff in my parents' house waiting to go, and it's kind of like I stumbled across it later on. And at the time he would kind of was getting out of doing woodworking so much. So he was like, cool, you know, it's great. He's into something that we both can be into, you know? So from there, I just kind of built my first snare drum over my parents' house with all my dad's tools and, you know, stained it outside in the sun and let it dry on the parking lot of my apartment building.
Oh, wow.
But like, that's kind of where it started. And then I was like, oh, well, the first one came out okay. And I still play it actually like all the time. So from there it's like, okay, you know, this is pretty cool. I wonder if I could do a full kit, you know, instead of, so at the time I was playing, you know, still junky, you know, pawn shop type drum sets forever. So when I started designing the drum kit that I play now, it was kind of like, you know, I was going deep into that forum. I was seeing all these like amazing drums that like are, you know, crazy inlay and all sorts of like, you know, going overboard with the woodworking talent. And I was like, oh, cool. It'd be cool to try something like way outside of my talent range right now. I just saw people building like woodworking jigs. So if you don't have a, you know, a big router set up, you could buy a router and pretty much build your own router table. So that table that's in the corner there was the first one that I could do big enough to route, you know, the bearing edges of the drums.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like I built that over my parents' house. I left it there for until I had, we moved into an apartment, like a little log cabin type place, and had a basement. So I was like, cool, dirt basement.
Wow. It's a Colette's Grove. You were doing woodworking back then.
Yeah, so that was 6 years ago I started.
See, I kind of thought it was more recent. I guess I didn't hear much about it.
6 years ago, we moved here, and so I've been in this space for about 5 or 6 years. But so over there, I think we were there for 2 or 3 years. So I was down in the basement. I built that drum kit in a dirt basement of a, you know, a little cat, you know, 800 square foot
log cabin. Yeah. That's
awesome. It was moldy on the ground and it was gross, you know, but I kind of built my own little tools to do it. And it just kind of spiraled from there. From there, I started, you know, getting out about, you know, I'd go play shows with my snare drum and people like, oh, you know, I like your drum, you know, that's pretty cool. Oh yeah, you know, I built it and the conversation spirals that way. So eventually I started, you know, doing repairs, modifications on people's drum sets. You know, you want to make your drum 4 inches shorter. You know, I'd cut it off with a table saw, reroute a new bearing edge, move all the hardware for the drums. And so, it's, you know, you can kind of do a lot of crazy stuff if you don't, you just, no rules, you know?
Was it scary to dissect someone else's drum, which could potentially be like their baby, and then like, you know, like basically a vivisection, and then bring it back to life?
What if I can't put it back together?
Yeah. I like take on kind of projects that I don't know how to do sometimes.
Yeah.
I had a photographer guy that I worked for once that told me, he's like, if people ask you, can you do this? Say yes. And in the time that it takes you to hang up the phone, research it.
Yep.
You know, you say you got 2 weeks until the project, you got 2 weeks to learn how to do it.
That's a good philosophy.
He would do that. And I kind of took that away of like, cool, you know, within reason.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, you got to keep your feet on the ground.
I can do open heart surgery.
Yeah. So a lot of times if I truly felt like it's too hard for me to do in a 800 square foot basement of a thing. It's like, if it's like something I couldn't do, I'm eager to say, you know, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I want you to know that I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Are you cool with that?
This,
you know, a lot of people just say, yeah, go for it. And so you'd be surprised how many people so far have been like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want. I'm like, okay. You know, I hope it comes out good.
Yeah. How long does it take to make a drum? I know that's an open question because there's tons of different drums and sizes, but like on average, like, okay, the first one you made.
Well, I mean, who's it for? And
yes.
What is it?
I guess, you know, just an average size drum that's for someone else. So you're putting a little more care into it. Like
snare drum. Eventually I got into building snare style. Stav snare drums, which are instead of a plywood, that's what most drum shells are these days. They're essentially plywood. So it's, you know, 6-ply, 8-ply, 10-ply. You can kind of go up. Eventually, I got into building what's called segmented. So it's almost like a barrel. So it's little blocks. It's about 20 blocks. They're all beveled at, to do a 14-inch drum. It's 9 degrees on each side. And you get 20 blocks at 2.45 width.
Whipping out your math skills.
On the outer dimensions, you glue it together. That gives you enough to lay the outside and lay the inside smooth on it's a router that's the bit sticks up from the bottom, and it's got a rotating base that kind of clamps the drum and rotates over the bit to kind of smooth the outside, and you kind of push it along the track. So you push it a second, roll it, take a nice smooth swipe out, and just keep going. So, I mean, that kind of stuff, that kind of drum takes a lot more time. You're cutting each block, you're making sure the angles are just right. If your measurements are off by, you know, a millimeter, it's not going to come tight when you clamp it, and you'll have gaps in between the seams. And eventually, you know, when you tighten the heads down, you know, from the top and bottom, the pressure will crack in between the segments. So if you're not dead on, it's the whole thing. I've had people bring them back. The first ones that I made was for a friend, and it cracked.
Oh.
So luckily he was from Burlington, Vermont at the time. So I was able to get it back from him, and I fixed it, got it back, and I guess it's fine.
It still lives to this day.
He hasn't sent anything back. So since then, it's like, you know, do it the first time for yourself. You know, hopefully roll all your learning curve into that one project. And then I usually start to feel comfortable to like, okay, I'll take your money to do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's, right.
I played a show on Saturday, and I was one of the guys in the bands I had been talking to a while ago about building a brass drum kit. So it's like, it's kind of just like this one over here. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a piece of brass metal that comes around, and it's riveted, just like an airplane, you know. And then you take the little wooden rings that are hanging there on the side, on the bottom.
Yeah.
And along the edge, you glue them to the inside, and that's what you cut the peak that the heads go on. Because the edge of the drums needs an angle. It can't just be, it can be flat, but it'll get weird overtones and stuff like that. So most drums, if you take the heads off and you look at the edges, it'll have, you know, either a shape, it might be round over, might be what they call a double 45, so it's kind of like a peak. And that'll give you like a lot of sustain and a lot of ringing and kind of balance it. But yeah, it's just like playing around with stuff and being willing to fail. And I do often.
It's like you have to use so many different parts of your brain to make this work, because you're dealing with, you know, the actual form of it, the actual function of it, and then functioning to a certain degree as far as sounds and all that. And then also just like, does it aesthetically look cool? You know, which I think yours do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and then you got to build, I mean, before I had more room, you know, I was building the jigs and the machinery to make you know, all the pieces also. So it's like, you're you have to make the tool before you could even make the thing that you want to make. So it's kind of that, like I'll get a thing stuck and I'll be like, okay, I'm going to work towards this for the next 6 months. And like, you know, when I have, you know, the little time that I have, you know, time is sparse these days, but, you know, my brain is usually kind of pulling in a couple different directions creatively. Yeah. And it's, you know, trying to balance what I have time to pull off realistically is what I usually have to like, okay, can't do this, can't do that.
How are you with scheduling your creative time? I know you just said, like, you know, you have a small child now and you have a family and all this stuff. But, like, as far as scheduling in between what you want to do, if you want to do music or woodworking or some photography, like, how do you pick and designate what you're going to do when you do have time?
I think to myself, do I have 15 minutes to spare? Okay, I'll go do this. You know, usually it's, especially now with, you know, I have a, he's going to be 1 year old. So it's difficult to, you know, by the time you have free time, you're beat completely and exhausted and you don't want to go, I don't want to go stand in the barn when in the fall for 2 or 3 hours and then go to work, you know, early the next day.
Right.
So it's gets harder and harder, but it's that kind of creative nag bothers you. I've kind of like this past year, I in my mind I was like, I give myself a free pass to like slow down a little bit on saying
you're changing
yes to
diapers and stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's like it's fine to turn things down, but it's like I had to convince myself, it's like, don't drive yourself crazy, you know. And I had to do that a couple times, and it still drives me nuts sometimes. Like I'll be at work just like thinking about the stupid thing I want to build, you know, that has nobody's name attached to it. It's like, why do I focus on that? Yeah. So
I really like the term creative nag. I'm going to steal that.
Yeah. It's like an itch.
Yeah.
Or it bothers you.
Yeah.
It bothers me when I can't, like, you know, if I don't play drums for a little while, I get irritable, like noticeably irritable. Yeah. Maybe it's just like the way that I play drums is kind of more all in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I play in a kind of a metal band, so it's like it's not jazz, you know, or blues at 70 BPM, you know.
Yeah.
It's so it's sometimes it's like you need that, whoa, holy cow, my whole body is doing everything.
Yeah.
And then you need that like all body high that you get. It's like running a marathon or something like that. It's kind of the same thing. And I think if I don't get that after a while, it's like I start to take it out on people. Mainly Ashley. So I'm sorry, honey, I love you.
What did it feel like the first time you like played music on your own drum that you built?
Pretty cool. Like when it sounded good, I was psyched. I kind of fully expected it to be like, okay, I know it's going to have some ringing thing that I can't get out. You know, right, I'll be like, tuning it forever and I'll be like, God, I hate you so much.
Like it looks like a drum, but does it sound like a drum?
Yeah, it sounds like a trumpet when you hit it. No, it's like, it feels good to like, especially that when you know, you play a show and drummers come up to you afterwards like, oh, I really like your drum set. Like, what kind of drums are those? I was like, oh, I built them in a basement. You know, and people are like, oh, that's cool.
Where can I get one?
Yeah.
And you direct them to facebook.com/browndrum.
And I say, you put all your cash in my hand and I'll make you whatever the hell you want. So, yeah, after a while it was, you know, I started with drums and kind of moved on. Eventually I built the kitchen table for Ashley and then that kind of spiraled furniture interest for me where I didn't really have it before. I was mainly like, okay, I want to build drums and drums. And after a while I built that table and it was wicked fun. And I was like, you know, it's actually the top of the table is floorboards from right up there.
Wow.
So it's that I pried the floorboards from this. We're currently sitting in like 100+ year old cow barn.
Yeah.
But I pulled the top boards out, and that's what the top of the table is.
So awesome.
I mean, it came out, you know, it's going for a rustic table. You got some rusticky wood.
For our listeners, their table is gorgeous. It is beautifully stained, and it looks
like
amazing.
It's like a 8-foot farmer's table.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of kicked off my interest in furniture and, oh, cool, maybe I'll, you know, build an end table. Somebody asked me, hey, can you make a bookcase? Sure, I can do that. You know, can you make a recording console? Sure, I can do that. You know, it's one of those things where I say yes, research
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Hope you didn't mess up by saying yes. And if you did, be honest about it, you know?
And when you're constructing
give your money back.
When you're constructing furniture, maybe for the first time or maybe down the line, are you following like a pattern that you find online, or are you eventually kind of designing it yourself, or how does that work?
Yeah, I kind of make everything myself. I'll look around at stuff, but I like to sketch things and then try to make it.
Yeah.
That's kind of the most fun part. So at work, I have pads of sketch pads that I just keep on my desk, and they're full of little tool inventions or little things, you know, that I want to try eventually to do. And I've got stacks of them. But I like to do that, like just take grid paper and kind of as close to, you know, the actual dimensions as I can get in my head. And then, I mean, it's always different when you actually go to do it. You have to usually change your plan like 4 or 5 times and then adjust to the thing that you broke. And then, you know, that's usually the way it goes. But again, learning curve is...
Do you ever get inspiration from, say, like other people's houses or restaurants and are just like, hey, I like that bookshelf. Can I measure it?
Ashley would bring me into Home Goods all the time, and I just stare under the table.
No, you're talking to the mic.
I know, but I stare underneath the dresser, and I look at how they constructed it, and I look at the bureaus, and I, so yeah.
So if people want to get some custom drums or furniture, would we direct them to a website? Or what's the best way to look at your work and then order some stuff?
I just have Facebook pages for both, where it's just me. I don't feel like I need a website.
Yeah.
It's like,
totally.
I got an email address and a phone number. You can, if you got an idea, let me know. But Level Plane Woodworks is what I kind of build furniture and non-drum things under. And then Brown Drum Co. is what I build drums under.
Nice. And of course, as always, we'll have links to those on our Facebook page for our folks to click on.
Hey, thanks.
Hey, help a brother out. So for the longest time, I knew you just as a musician. And I remember actually when Ashley told me, she's like, oh, yeah, I'm seeing this guy. He's a drummer. And I was like, oh,
red flag.
Run for the hills, girl. No, not really.
So he's an idiot, is what you're saying.
But I mean, we've known each other for like 15 years or something at this point. So and you were drumming long before that. So like, how did you get into music?
Actually, I feel like I kind of picked it up a little bit late. I picked up guitar when I was maybe 12 or so.
That's not late. I got into music when I was 24.
I don't play guitar often.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the greatest guitar player. I could play guitar, but I can get through punk rock songs. That's about it.
Yeah. You know, you started with guitar.
Yeah, I started with guitar. So I've always kind of noodled. I got an acoustic guitar that was my dad's when he was a kid from my grandmother. So that was my first little guitar. It was a little classical acoustic guitar. It had nylon strings. It's tiny, perfect for a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
So I would sit 2 feet away from the TV watching The Simpsons doing that. My brother would go crazy. He was like, you suck. Stop, 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 stop. You suck. But I kept going. So eventually I kind of picked up interest. I think my mom noticed that I was like, always playing this little guitar in front of the TV. So eventually I kind of begged to get an electric guitar. Took a few lessons. The first one was at a little music shop, and that first guy was the theory guy. If you know what I mean by music, you know, lessons as far as guitar goes.
Yeah.
So he would, you know, here's the notes, here's how, you know, half notes and quarter notes, yada yada. I went to that guy, and then that place shut down. So I went, you know, I was only going for maybe a month or two. So I picked up a little like basic music theory. And, you know, eventually I started going to this guy, and he was the riff guy. Aww. So he would, you know, hey, you want to learn how to play Crazy Train by Ozzy? You know, there's no theory going on. It's like, I will show you how to play the riff, and that's what this lesson is, you know. You know, you like that riff from, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd? Here we go. Let's learn it. So it was like that. And eventually I was like, I don't know. Like, I was never interested in learning other people's songs.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I would just noodle endlessly. Never actually writing anything on guitar, at least when I was younger.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of played with it. I still do every now and again. I've got guitars and a lot of junk laying around. Yeah. Musical hoarder is kind of what I'm into. I think most musicians seem to be like that.
I have a violin, and I've never even played violin.
No.
I have a trumpet, an accordion.
Do you have a saxophone?
No.
I need to find somebody that has a saxophone.
I hate saxophones.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I do too, kind of, but...
Kind of.
Where the idea is not like we're going to be playing the saxophone.
It's not going to be a Bill Clinton
it'll be like,
session.
Rah, kind of sound that I'm looking for.
That's the one instrument we don't have.
Yeah. Yeah. No, nobody wants the saxophone.
I only like saxophone when it's in like New Orleans jazz bands or something. Like that is really fun.
You know,
but...
I used to, for a long time, I would have the saxophone for many years. Yeah. You know, I've hated it as an instrument. But yeah, I think I discovered Dr. John and I started listening to like a lot of New Orleans music. And
yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
Okay, I love it.
Yeah.
You know, in this setting, play it in a ska band and I will hate your guts.
This is interesting.
From the stage, I will shoot darts at you.
I always really liked the saxophone. And I always said if I was going to learn an instrument, that would be the one I would learn. It was because of that guy in The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and Lisa played the saxophone and she loved that. Like, what was that guy's name?
Michael Jackson?
No.
You know that episode,
the saxophone
though.
Guy.
Lisa, it's your birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, you remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Used to do that a lot. So, yeah.
That's... Side note, ska is Jeff's favorite genre music. One of
Jeff,
the top.
Come
I would
on.
Say, like, chill electronica is probably his top now.
Okay,
but he has a severe soft spot for ska. And most ska I'm not a fan of, but there is one band, Suburban Legends, that's wicked awesome. And I've seen them live. So occasionally it'll trickle and it'll be okay. Sorry, Jeff. I love you.
Yeah, I turned to my stomach.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm pretty open-minded musically, but it's some things that just like, just poke me in the side that I... As soon as I hear it, I think it's that upchuck guitar thing that I just don't like it in that rhythm. It really bothers me.
That's
interesting. It's always that same song. It sounds, I can't tell ska bands apart.
Do you think
is
it solely the music or is it also the like personas that are connected with it? Like a lot of people I was talking with someone recently about like anime and how a lot of people look down on it, but it's kind of about, they look down on the certain audience that shouts about it all the time. That's kind of an annoying audience.
Yeah.
And so they give it a bad name. And when I think of ska, I think of like the tool bag guys wearing the zoot suits in the 90s that were like trying to be way too cool and they just weren't. And
Zoot Suit Riot.
Yeah.
I think about the plaid shorts and the, the fedora hat.
So there's a culture connected with it rather than
I don't think that's what bothers me.
No.
Because growing up, I got into skateboarding was before. You know, I picked up guitar and skateboarding kind of at the same time. And skateboarding is pretty much all I did into my 20s. I fall down now and I can't get back up. So I don't skateboard as much. But that kind of kicked off, you know, discovering punk rock and, you know, going to the skate park and seeing all the grungy punk dudes. And I'm like, whoa, who are you? You know?
Yeah.
You know, I'm over there playing T-ball in the field and I look over and see the, you know, the scary punk rock guys at the skate park, you know, building their own ramps. And it used to be a roller hockey rink that they kicked down all the walls and just took it over, just built the skate park. It used to be a roller rink and they just destroyed it and built the skate park. And the town was like, okay.
Wow.
And then eventually they took all the home-built stuff away and they built a little concrete skate park there in the same spot. So that was kind of like my home.
So skating and music were kind of linked, like culture-wise?
Definitely. For me, it's that was kind of the pivot point of like discovering like, I really like punk rock. I really like skateboarding and I'm really interested in like playing music all of a sudden. And, you know, it seemed like all the punk rock guys were more open to art and... You know, they had mohawks and crazy looking clothes and were scary looking, you know, skateboarding and combat boots. You know, it was pretty hardcore at the time.
Yeah.
So for, you know, being young and impressionable, I was like, oh, that's freaking awesome. I want to go hang out over there. I'm done with T-ball, Mom. You know, I'm over this shit. But so from there, I kind of like skateboarding pushed me more towards music. And eventually I shifted the balance of, you know, skateboarding less, being more interested in music. I think discovering punk rock started with, like, you know, Black Flag. Well, going back to ska, you know, those guys at the time, they were listening to Black Flag and Minor Threat and, like, the kind of the more straight edge, you know, harder core punk rock. And, like, you know, they would just talk shit on the ska band. And, like, they would just, at the time, you'd go listen to a ska band afterwards. And it was, like, not aggressive enough for me because I'd already heard, you know, Brad Brains at full volume.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go to a ska band after that.
It's way more neater and, like, peppier.
Yeah. My eyes had been blown back, so I couldn't go to anything happier at the time. I was like, I need the most aggressive thing that I could find for whatever reason.
Do you think, not to get all, like, therapy on you, but, like, was there a reason you wanted to, like, what was that primal need to scream?
teen angst.
Yeah.
You know? It's just like everybody else.
Yeah, but I turned to rom-coms. I mean, it's still
no. At the time, I think that at skate park and those, like, the older, like, there were high school kids at the time, and I'm, like, 13. So I was like, you know, these are cool guys. You know, they're dangerous dudes, you know, drinking beer over there and smoking weed. And, you know, I'm like, oh, boy. So at the time, I kind of gravitated towards that. And then those guys kind of, you know, I'd get a tape from somebody, and then I'd kind of wear that tape out. I remember I got a Minor Threat mixtape from some greasy dude that had Minor Threat on one side, Bad Brains on the other, and I just, like, wore it out at home. That was the Walkman days. I'd go to bed with my headphones on, just blaring punk rock, you know, sharing a bedroom that's about half the size of this room with my brother, and he's trying to sleep, and he could just hear it blaring out of my headphones. Like, he would stop, you know. Turn it down. Like, I can hear you through your head, what you're listening to. But, and so something about, you know, loud, aggressive music just, like, turned the light switch on for me for whatever reason. And it kind of just spiraled heavier and darker and faster, you know.
And then you threw drums into the mix?
Yeah. Well, actually, I think I started playing drums later on. I picked up drums when I was, like, 17 because no one else plays drums.
It's hard to fill that role. Yeah.
There are a lot of guitar players out there, and there are not a lot of drummers. So if you are a good drummer, you can be a very popular individual quickly. Luckily, I never had that problem.
No, that's not true. Shut up.
It's true. It was more my two friends, Gary and Paul, the grandest, you know, we're in high school, and, oh, you know, I think at the time I had discovered through skateboarding that there's local scene. Holy shit, there's punk rock bands in the next town over that are in high school and are awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think I discovered, you know, going to community shows and basement shows, and that just kind of blew my mind up that, like, holy shit, like, you could just do that? Like, I didn't know you could just play. You know, you can get crappy gear and turn it up really loud and it sounds awesome. Like, I didn't know you could do that. So I think at the time the three of us were like, you know, we want to play music, you know, stupid to have three guitar players, you know, somebody's got to play drums. At the time, Paul's parents would let us play over his house. So he had a basement, he had a drum set up there. So I would, you know, me and Paul would kind of take turns playing drums, and we were both awful, you know, all of us were just awful, but it's like, it's the perfect way to learn how to play. I think, at least self-taught. So it's, you know, I never took drum lessons ever. Just kind of openly accept that you will suck for a long time and just like, just have fun. You know, as long as you have fun, it doesn't matter. And, you know, I've just been having fun for a long time that I kind of picked it up in a certain way. So yeah, that's kind of how drums started for me. So we would, you know, play in the basement on the weekends after school, and then, you know, graduated high school and we all kind of went our separate ways.
And you went to an art school.
Went to art school.
Yeah.
Because at the time I was, again, skateboarding kicked off most of my interest in my life. You know, that's what started photography for me. You know, I'm skateboarding and I'm looking at Thrasher magazine and I'm looking at all the, you know, the cool stuff in there. I'm like, you know, I want to go to cool skate spots and I want to take pictures of my friends who are better at skateboarding than me. You know, I'll make my friend jump down the 10 set stairs. You know what I mean? I'll sit at the bottom and watch you fall. But that's what kind of kicked photography off for me. I got just a cheapo, I think it was a Canon EOS Rebel, you know, a cheapo entry-level DSLR, and, you know, just shooting film. And it was fun. I shot a lot of film, and I have tons. I realized recently that I have a ton of photos from pretty much my entire high school life, that at some point I went to college and started shooting digital, and I'd stopped keeping anything. You know, I feel like I blanked out for 10 years of photography, and I know I did some.
Yeah.
And they're on hard drives somewhere, but it's like, I don't see them. I don't look at them. There's no way to find the ones in the hard drive that I've lost. You know what I mean? There's so much stuff that I've taken and never seen again. And it's like, at least with film, it's sitting in a bucket in my attic, and if I want to go dig through it, I can, you know? So that's what kind of brought me back to, you know, shooting film, where I kind of got out of doing digital altogether. I'm just not interested in it. I don't know. I like the science and the math of film. I think that's what I'm more interested in. It's perceived to be one shot, and I like one shot things. You know, wood is one shot. You know, if you take too much away, you messed up and you have to do it all over again. So it's, I kind of like that style of artwork where it's like, you don't come back to it. It's not, you make it and then you're done, you know, in one thing. It's not a revisited anything. Maybe that's because I don't have perceived time to myself, that I'm like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm moving on to the next thing so I could sleep at night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's just an agreement I'm kind of made with myself to like, okay, you need to let that project go. You know, especially when you can't finish things, it has a tendency to drive me a little spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I got off topic.
No, that's okay.
No, that was really good. I was thinking to myself, like, what a good quote.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
What did I say?
You get to read it on
Facebook.
I don't
know what the hell I'm talking about.
I just want to.
It's all this.
Oh, it's not. It's going to be after the haunted show. I'm just, for the record, for me, I'm wicked excited you're in the haunted show.
I have never shown my art anywhere before.
You submitted photos?
I did three photo.
You'll see them when we go.
But I have never been in an art show in my whole life.
Are you f-ing kidding me?
That's so cool.
This is my first one.
Why?
And I've been to art school. Two different art schools.
Wait. Stop.
I just don't.
Wait. Your work is beautiful. I love your photography. And I don't care that you're my friend. I don't like it because you're my friend. I like it because it's awesome. Why have you not shown? Are you lazy?
I don't feel the need to.
That's a better answer than I'm lazy.
I I don't know. I kind of do it for me. I don't care.
The most purest thing I've ever friggin' heard.
I kind of don't care. It's more interesting to me to just like do it. I mean, it's great that I have an avenue to do it. You know, it's exciting.
You don't feel a need to show your work at all.
Not my photography. I don't know.
I was recently listening to a TED talk.
I have a bunch of it. Film shot. I've been shooting stuff for years.
Are you in the haunted show, which is at Main Street Art, which might still be out at this point when this is released, but the exhibit will have already opened.
The opening.
Rob's work, as well as mine, and some of our other interviewees will be showing there, like Raphael Bastek. Are you showing in there because I harassed you to, or did you have a change of heart?
Yes.
Oh. It wasn't that strong of a harassment, though. I was like, hey, do you want to put some work in?
You asked me, and I thought for a minute, and I was like, why not? You know,
I like that.
Actually,
say yes.
Full disclosure, I had just bought those three frames at IKEA. They were sitting there with nothing in them. You asked me, and I said, sure.
Finally get to use those frames.
Yeah.
I love that.
And when I'm done, I'll probably take out the skulls or whatever spooky shit I'm putting up and put something nice up on my wall.
I recently was listening to a TED Talk where it was an actor, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, was talking about what?
He's handsome.
He is.
Ashley, my wife, really likes him.
You have similar eyes to him, so that kind of makes sense. You look like him a lot, especially when your hair is short. Yeah. Yeah. You're a handsome guy. Just friggin' accept it.
Yeah.
take her word for it.
He did a 14-minute TED Talk about when you want more attention, you actually are less creative and less producing of good stuff. Mm. And when you pay attention more and like let go of wanting attention, you know, that happens. So it's interesting. I've never talked to an artist who hasn't sought to exhibit or exhibited before.
There's partially a reason to it too. After I went to college for photography, and after I graduated, I was working, you know, doing weddings and assisting photo jobs and shooting pictures of babies and people screaming kids. And I said to myself, I absolutely hate this. Yeah. What am I doing? How did I come to this place, you know, where I chase something that I like to do, but it's just the thing that I like to do when no one tells me what to do. You know, when I don't have to make money at it, it's great.
Yeah.
If I do, you know, I got to the point in doing photography professionally that I wouldn't pick on my camera at all. Outside of, it was like, it was a job and I didn't.
Yeah, you didn't love it.
After a while, it was like, I haven't taken a picture for fun in months, you know, 6 months, 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got burnt out on like the whole thing of it. So after a while, I was like, I got a normal job. You know, I stopped doing photography jobs. I stopped shooting weddings. I stopped, you know, assisting anything like that. People ask me, hey, can you shoot my wedding? No, I can't. You know, or hey, can you shoot my wedding? Sure, $10,000.
Really?
And they'd be like, well, I can't afford that. And be like, I guess I'm not doing it. You know, because that's what it would cost for me to put up with the bullshit of doing your wedding. It's like,
I love that.
Not that it's.
It makes perfect sense. It's like chefs who don't cook at home.
Yeah. Well, it's like you just get jaded on it. And I was completely jaded. Like, you know, you've been to 30 weddings in a year. It's like your special day isn't special. It's just like everyone else's.
But mine really was.
And the wedding on Sunday is the same as the wedding on Saturday. And it's after a while, it's like, I can't think of anything creative to do in this realm. It's like some people are, you know, pick it up and that's what they like and they're good at it and they can find ways to challenge themselves artistically. And for me, I was like, I got nothing in the tank. I hate this. I hate being here. I don't want to talk to you. Your money isn't worth it. You know, and that has kind of ever since then has kind of inspired every artistic endeavor I've done purposefully in a way, because it's like it's just pure and I don't have to please anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if it comes out great, I feel good. You know, if it doesn't work and, you know, my camera has a lens flare and the whole shot that I tropped out into the woods to get comes out like crap. Oh, well. You know, I'll try it again next time I get buy some film and have time to go walk in the woods, you know.
That sounds immensely freeing. I feel I'm in the middle where I'm making art to sell, to try to make money, to pay for the studio that I pay for. But I'm also not, I don't feel like I'm selling my soul, but it's this in-between where I do feel pressure.
Yeah, and that's where, for me, music is more, I'm in that middle realm with the band.
Yes.
Just because there are, you know, there are two other people involved.
In your band's name?
Technically, it's Keep Your Opinions to Yourself, but we have squashed it down over the years to Kyoty, or K-Y-O-T-Y. It's a lot.
Kyoty.
I get, hey, Kyoty, you guys are awesome, Kyotes. I'm like, yeah, thanks. What's the point in correcting people? It's no point.
Seriously.
But
I love that name. I mean, and you guys have been playing for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 10 years. 10 Ooh, years this wow. year I've been in this band. And again, it all kind of goes back to that of like, you know, what are you doing it for? You know, you doing it for you because you enjoy it? Or are you doing it to get X, Y, Z, you know?
Money, attention.
Yeah.
Girls.
Yeah.
Fame.
Fame.
Yeah. That's what I strive for. Fame.
Yeah, you were so eager to do this podcast.
No. I was made to do this against my will, everyone.
You were more open to submitting artwork than you were to this podcast.
Yes. No, I had a real fear of like public speaking too, and this is like triggering me slightly.
Yep.
But I don't like being like the one person that people are staring at as I speak for whatever reason.
Okay. We won't look at you.
Yeah, so divert your eyes for the rest of the conversation.
No, listeners, look at just a photograph of Rob while you're listening. Yeah.
I'll provide a headshot.
We will need one for the headliner. Please.
It'll be obnoxious, though.
Let's give you a taste of Quixote. This is the song 14 off of their Live at 3S album.
You're in a band and you're the drummer. Yes. What is does the music making process look like?
It's morphed over the years. We're an instrumental band, mainly. We kind of set a no rules approach to when we go into record stuff because cool. You know, you're limited to what, you know, we are guitar based drums. If you want to add 20 layers of guitar, go for it, you know. If you want to add weird synth sounds, sure. If you want to break a bunch of glass and we'll put that in the mix too, you know, we've done that kind of stuff, which is, that's fun. You know, that's the best part about recording. As far as being in a band, having that kind of no rules thing. But originally, you know, we would, you know, all the three of us in a room together, just, hey, I got this thing that I figured out on my couch, you know, bounce it off you, bounce it off me. At this point, I've been playing in the same band for 10 years. You know, if we sit down to jam, I know what you're going to play. I know when you're going to change. I know what you're going to do. Even if you're making it up, it's one of those things you just kind of, if you play with the same people for long enough, you just know what they do. You know, oh, he's going to go to this solo, and I know what kind of range he's going to go to based on what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. And then after that, maybe I'll stumble on something, and then it'll change into something really cool. And that's usually at the point where, you know, you kind of play until you go, hey, whatever we're doing at this current second is pretty cool and different than what we would normally do and not stupid jam stuff. So we would stop and we have just like a Zoom recorder.
Yep.
We just record our practice, record whatever we had at that moment. Even if it's, you know, a single mic in the middle of the room of a blaring, you know, there's amps to the ceiling, but it's, you know, a single mic a lot of these demos. But over time, it's transform from kind of hash it out to Nick will come in and say, I have a whole song done.
Yep.
You know, ready to go. It's complicated. Good luck. You know, that's kind of how it goes sometimes. But
your music, I would define as like a beautiful / heavy, complicated masterpiece / mess.
Screeching. Yeah, we're to the point now where Nick has a pretty like extensive home recording setup at this point. You know, he kind of have, it's like having a full recording studio, essentially. He's got tons of synths and all sorts of stuff. Our demos are getting a little more thorough,
yeah.
You know, like they sound done pretty much when he's like, hey, I have this song. And, you know, I roughed out drums for what I'm thinking. And again, it's like that benefit of playing with someone for 10 years, like he knows how I would play drums. So a lot of times the song he sends is like, yeah, that's what I would have done, I think. And, you know, I might tweak little things here and there or, you know, ways to spice it up for myself. You know, so there's different approaches. Sometimes it comes in, you know, this is it. We're going to learn it and we're going to change 20%, you know, based on what it's actually like between the three of us when we actually go to play it. And sometimes it's, you know, hey, how you doing? Yeah, we talking about algebra or some stupid crap that we talk about. Fonts.
Yep.
I'm in a band with like two nerd guys.
I love it. Although you wouldn't.
Two aggressive nerd guys.
You wouldn't think Nick is a nerd based on how he looks.
No, he's a character.
Yeah. He's a tattoo artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I was lucky to kind of hitch my wagon to two creative, like super creative dudes who are like both of their outputs creatively are, you know, Nick paints, you know, tons of stuff a year. And I'm like, how do you, I get it. You're an full-time artist. That's what you do is draw. You know what I mean? But like, I always see how much work the two of those guys are pumping out. I'm like, how do you have time to do all this? Because they both have musical side projects too. Mm-hmm. So eventually we started releasing our own music, just because what's the point of signing up with someone and they tell you what to do? You know what I mean? You're,
yeah.
Again, it all comes back to like that DIY mentality.
Creative control.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you don't want to give up your little baby or your project to someone else's influence. And it's like, especially if you have people who can draw and record. And Nat is a graphic designer, illustrator. So it's, you know, he does all our flyers. He does our website. He does all the online stuff. He's the brains of the operation. I'm the nice guy that answers people's emails. And Nick's the guy that comes in with the riff that's hard to play.
That's awesome. But you do bring photography to the mix too. I notice a lot of your photos in posters and album art and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's luckily it's been really collaborative. I think that's why we still do it. You know, it's we got into our regular schedule where we, you know, it's fun to play with my two friends. You know, I see them once a week. It's great. But it's nice to be able to, like, you know, the whole thing that we make is three people putting stuff in and stirring it all together. And, you know, what you get is what you got.
It's pretty incredible to have something like that last for a decade.
Yeah. You got to be able to tolerate each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Because so much stuff happens.
And especially bands, they say it's like being in a marriage. And it truly is.
It is.
I don't know. I feel lucky that I've got it to the point where, you know, I'm in a consistent band that is able to record and write music, play shows every now and again, and then still, you know, have a family and a life, other things that I do too, you know what I mean? But it's good to have, Quixote is always like that reliable musical creative thing where, like, even if I feel like I'm not accomplishing anything in here, you know, I can drive to Dover, beat the out of my drum set, and I feel good for like a day or two. And then I start thinking about all the other stuff that I haven't done yet.
It's a cycle.
Yeah. Once the buzz wears off, you know.
Yeah.
What's sort of your philosophy as a parent and a musician with incorporating your kid into your creative stuff? Do you plan on teaching your kid how to drum?
We have a lot of instruments in the house. We have got the piano right in the living room. So, you know, me and him will sit down at it and we leave a little ukulele out and he plays with that sometimes and a little xylophone. Yeah, he's adorable. But I don't want to be, you know, hey, you're taking lessons when you're four, you know. Yeah. I'm not going to be that guy. But if you want to play it, you know, go ahead. You know, I'd like to, that little guitar over there, I'd like to give him that someday. So like, that's kind of little project that I have, you know, even if he doesn't play it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That is awesome. That's really sweet.
I'll give it to him and then I'll be like, you got to leave it here though. You can't take it with you when you leave. It's mine, okay? Is what I'm going to say. You could play it sometime.
And as far as all of your creative pursuits, does any of that intersect with your lovely wife, Ashley, at all?
Sometimes. She is usually my quality control. That's what I call my wife. Usually, because she's got a good eye, and she sees the thing that I don't want her to see really quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's usually the test of, like, can other people not see my mistake? And she sees it immediately. I'm like, you know, yeah, you know, I got to fix this or do that.
She's a creative herself. She's an artist herself.
Yeah, so. She does it all too, you know. Yeah. So it's good to have someone to bounce things off. And she's honest, you know, what's this thing? What's that? Why'd you do that? I'm like, why are you asking me this question? You know, I gotta stop showing you stuff. But as far as, you know, woodworking and photography and the band, it's kind of separate, I guess.
Yeah. Mm.
That's my selfish time. Because it is. It's very...
You need that.
Yeah. But it is very self-serving, and I realize that. So I appreciate being able to get out and, you know, exert my creative pulse a little bit every now and again, but... Stuff these days. No time.
I think we need to do rapid fire now.
No, great. I like to form my thoughts before.
No.
These are, we're going to ask you a series of very quick questions, but we'll start off with favorite color.
Green.
Favorite taste.
Pickles.
They're green.
Bread and butter pickles in particular.
Oh, I like dill.
The wrong kind.
No, I mean, I love all pickles, but bread and butter is at the top.
Ah, I see. Favorite smell?
I like Dr. Bronner's peppermint soap. Smells really good.
Nice. Very specific.
It's in my nose currently, so it's just I'm thinking about it.
Favorite sound?
Feedback. Guitar feedback, probably.
Yeah, that's a good one. Favorite texture?
Turtle.
What? I was not expecting a turtle. You're a woodworker. I thought it would be something to do with that.
Wood is smooth.
Or like your baby's head or something. A turtle?
It's interesting to touch.
A specific turtle? Do you have a turtle?
No, I mean, turtle shell. It's just a little
any
bumpy.
Turtles?
How often are you touching turtle shells?
I wish I touched turtles more often, to tell you the truth. I don't touch turtles
out,
enough.
Turtles. Run.
I thought you guys had a turtle. That's why I agreed to this.
I would.
This is a turtle podcast, right? That's what I signed up for.
That was funny.
That's really funny.
Most inspiring place you've traveled?
I went to, where are we going? Italy. Lake Como, Italy.
Like River Como?
No, like a lake. Like a lake version of the Weezer.
Yeah. But it's a river. Get it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really funny.
We got
it. I'm impressed with myself, even if you two aren't. What band are you listening to on repeat right now? Like, what band are you super into these days?
King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Fantastic name.
They are, I'm hooked. They're like coolest band ever. They just released a new record that is awesome.
We'll have to check it out.
They're like genre jumping. So they're the one that they just released is like heavy metal, pretty much like thrash metal almost. You know, they have like, I think 15 records or something like that. They do like a couple a year.
Yeah.
The one that came out earlier this year was like a power pop, weird noise pop kind of record, like super happy.
Yeah.
And then they put out this like heavy metal record the same year. And it's like, what the hell is going on? Right? But they have two drummers, seven guys in the band, two drummers, three guitar players, a bass player, and a guy that plays keyboards and does harmonica. It sounds like it's all squeezed through the same filter, but it's wildly different.
Wow.
So it's something for everybody.
Yeah.
Go check them out.
I'm definitely going to listen to them. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Learn to play drums sooner.
That's really good advice.
Yeah. Stop noodling with that crappy classical guitar in front of the TV. Actually, I think part of the reason why it took me so long to play drums is my parents would never, like, weren't cool with me having a drum set. It's like,
most parents aren't.
We didn't have the room in the house, and like there's just like there was a way it was gonna happen. I didn't even bother asking. So I was like, I knew the answer was no. So I eventually, I think I was 17 or so when I bought my first drum set, and I left it. I would leave it over Paula's house.
Yeah.
So for me to practice was, you know, the hour that I'd go over to Paul's house and play. So I feel like I've never been keen to practice outside of that.
Yeah.
So it's taken me a long time to be able to play. Just learning that way, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Get a lesson and start sooner, I guess.
We appreciate you being on this podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for asking me/making me do it.
That was so false. That was a very labored sentence you just said. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hold on.
It was okay.
Want me to try it again?
No.
Hey, thanks.
No, you're awesome. You do so many creative endeavors, and I appreciate all the stuff that you do. And even if you don't realize it yourself sometimes, it's pretty awesome.
Oh,
yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. So we end every episode, we in tandem say the same thing. So with that,
show us your creative guts.
Thanks.
No, thank you.
Thanks.
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 Huge thank you to Rob for being on Creative Guts.
Rob and I have been friends for over a decade, and even with that kind of lengthy history, I still learned so much about him that I did not know of his work and his process. I think so highly of your work, Rob, and the range of mediums you use to create. You're an amazing creative and a lovely human being. I know you don't always love to talk about yourself or promote yourself, like a lot of artists, but I want to say I really appreciate you being on the podcast and sharing all the cool stuff you do. It, I think, should be in the world more, so I'm just going to keep pushing you to shout about your work a little more.
If you also enjoyed hearing about Rob's creative endeavors, you can see his custom drums at facebook.com/browndrum. And you can find Level Plane Woodworking on Facebook too. And you can find Rob's band Quixote online and on Facebook. And as per usual, we'll have links to all of that stuff on our Facebook page, Creative Guts Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to Creative Guts.
We'll have a new episode for you next Wednesday.
I got a point.
In case we leave this in for the listeners,
I got a point.
We're God starting to tally when Sarah, myself, or our guest
move our arms,
make a boo boo,
yeah,
and hit the equipment or the table and make an extra noise. This could get cut, so this might not.
No pressure. I need a straight jacket to finish this interview. Doing it again, I just broke the bottle cap of my thing. I'm being loud.
I don't want to lose, so put a mark down. Sorry, Rob.
I'll take my point. I'm actually going for a high score, guys.
Sarah marked one down for her, so she's being honest.
You're definitely going to get a high score. What are we, like 12 minutes in?
Does anybody else get scored?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, we had to kick somebody out of
the room. Is this a shared thing?
I need to kick somebody out of the room.
Wow, really?
Yeah. No. We ended the episode. We were like,
the last guy we did, and then we was trashed the worst.
You guys are intense.
We deleted the episode.
Our last interviewee was pretty terrible.
Yeah, no.
Don't say his name. Yeah. We don't want to be connected to the crime.
I mean, I don't know what you're talking about.
You're laughing right into the mic.
Point for Laura, too. I heard a
God. But it was during a lecturing moment. All right.
Oh, okay. Come on. We're just not.
It's only fair.
We're not doing
well.
Fair. We're not doing well. This is. Wow. I should scrap this. We're just doing really bad.
You and Sarah tied. That's why she's saying it.
Oh, boy.
All right, let's pause for just a sec. Make all the noises you want. Drum it out.
Woo-woo. Probably just woke Ben up. Ashley's like, mother shut up.
You're in trouble.
God.
Don't let it derail you. It's okay.
I'm still in the lead. It's her face. She's
like way too happy.
Yeah.
Only because I'm winning and I don't like it.
The pure joy of giving me a point.
Severely losing.
Look,
Laura's
two.
Doing great.
Yeah.
I just picture you going.
I fiddle like this.
After each point. Evil laugh.
That was such a good
Count Dracula. Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of Sesame Street. I'm going to cross my hands and put them in my pocket.
There you go. I need like a toy.
Yeah, we need like a little
like a stress ball or something.
I could get you some toys. You want some toys? Right. What kind of toys? Time that I kind of picked it up in a certain way. Sorry. How about a thumbs up instead?
Just keep talking. Pretend I'm
sitting there. I'll distract you. Paparazzo over here pointing camera in my face. Wow, you guys are like organized.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
Hold on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh. I didn't even know that was available.
This is the right one. I need to label these.
Okay. Laughs after everything I say from now on. New rule. Oh. Hey, guys, how you doing? Thanks for coming out. Oh. Wow. No one invited you anyways.
That's fun. We've messed with that a bunch.
That'll be your promo right there.